Okay, dear students, it's time for the money pitch, if you will. It's time to now take what we've learned and try to coalesce it down into a single mutual fund. Because we got to start somewhere, right? First, though, we're going to take a look at some fund families. Because what has happened over the years is these companies that maybe had one mutual fund, two mutual funds, then added 3 or 4, 5 or 6, 10, 12, 20, 30, 100, 200 funds. They have created these what are called family of funds, which exists when one investment company manages an entire group of mutual funds. And the funds vary in their objectives in the family. And they've created mutual funds that have fit in all the different categories that we talked about, and then the subcategories and the subcategories, and that's how you wind up with 12,000 funds. You can move your money from one fund to another fund within the fund family almost always with no charge. But if it's in a taxable account, the IRS says, oops, you just generated a taxable transaction. So you have to be careful about that. If it's in a retirement account, you can move it as much as you want. Now, you don't really want to move them that often. They're mutual funds. They're long-term investments, which means we spend, you know, we leave them there and let them do their things for 5, 10 years or so, depending on the situation. But typically, they're long-term investments. And Forbes said it best. I wish I had thought of this. Choose a family, not a fund. Right. So you choose a family that has, in my humble opinion, funds that have done well, beaten their indices over decades. They're the people we're looking for. Okay, well, let's take a look at some of them. Now, this top 10 list is very fishy. I don't really trust it, and it's really hard to get this data. The Investment Company Institute doesn't provide it. That's the nonprofit trade group, and I have a funny feeling I know why. They don't want to anger any of their members, so they just basically keep quiet. But we know that the top 4 or 5, we know them, and then down here it gets a little dicey. But Vanguard by far is the world's largest mutual fund company. Now, there's another group called BlackRock that is actually the world's largest money manager. They do more than just mutual funds, but their mutual funds are behind the size of their assets under management are behind Vanguard. So there's a little bit of confusion there. Some people think BlackRock is the largest mutual fund manager. No, it is not. It is the largest money manager in the world, but not the largest mutual fund manager. Now, for decades, Fidelity was the number one mutual fund company. And then Vanguard passed them, and then BlackRock passed them. But Fidelity's, you know, not a shabby company. I just think they have too many darn funds, and they just overwhelm people. In fact, they're a very smart marketing organization. You go to their website, you sign up for them. You sign up with them. They'll let you buy almost any mutual fund. You can get 9,000 mutual funds on through them directly. Pretty amazing. The sleeper is the Capital Group. They go by the name American Funds, but now they're trying to change their name back to the Capital Group. They're kind of strange, but I'm really a big fan of these guys. They started in, you know, 1931 or something like that, and they called themselves Capital. Capital Group, Capital Research and Management. But they have funds like the Investment Company of America, the Growth Fund of America, the Bond Fund of America. And so everybody started calling them the American Funds. So they said, okay, we're the American Funds. But then they decided they wanted to go global, and they don't want to be the American Funds outside the United States, so they're trying to change their name inside the United States back to Capital, which it was from the beginning. But if they had asked me, which they don't, and they make a lot more money than I do, so I should just keep my mouth shut. But if they had asked me, I would say, look, stay the American Funds in the United States, and then outside the United States you can be Capital, because other companies do that. You go to Japan, Panasonic isn't not Panasonic. I think it's Standard or National or something like that. So you talk to them. They're based in Los Angeles. But again, these companies are all around the world because they need to be. They have people all around the world. Now, State Street Global Advisors is a company that used to service other mutual fund companies, but they got in the exchange-traded fund business and have done very well for themselves. Another long-lived company is called T. Rowe Price, based in Baltimore, but again, they're global. In fact, they're one of the first mutual fund companies, not the, you know, not the only one, but they're one of the first mutual fund companies to go global, and very good funds, very, very good funds. Invesco is a company that's cobbled together by a few other companies, including one of the long-lived companies, Oppenheimer, and they're based in Denver, and they've got some pretty good funds. They've got some funds I'm not too excited about. DFA, Dimensional Fund Advisors, markets, or at least did, I think they might have be branching out, but they marketed to stockbrokers, to financial advisors, and they've got some very, very good funds. But I don't know that much about them, to be truth. I should know more, but I don't. Sorry. This is too many. I mean, this is just the top 10. There are dozens. And then Pacific Investment Company, Pacific Investment Management Company, based in, of all places, Newport Beach, has some very large bond funds. In fact, the best bond investor in the world used to work for them, but now he's actually at Invesco now. And then Franklin Templeton, poor Franklin Templeton. I mean, I shouldn't say poor. They've got great funds, folks. Don't get me wrong, but I think they've kind of lost their way. It's run by a woman and she's making a whole lot more money than I do. So I should shut my mouth, right? But they bought Legg Mason. I'm like, why did you buy Legg Mason? Anyway, that she's running the ship. And don't get me wrong, Franklin Templeton has some great funds. In fact, remember Sir John Templeton? Right, he sold his mutual funds when he retired to Franklin, and they became Franklin Templeton. So check them out. But remember that this is just, there's just, you know, 10. There are dozens of mutual fund families. Some have hundreds of funds, some have, you know, less than funds. One of my favorite mutual fund companies is called Dodge & Cox. It's only got like 7 funds, or maybe they're up to 8 now. And they've been around since 1931 or so, but they resisted the urge to just create more and more and more funds. They said, look, it's too many. We don't need that many. But because of the mutual fund scandals of 2003, 3 companies that were in the top 10 are no longer here. Whoa, whoa, wait a minute, Piano. Did you just say mutual fund scandals? You want me to invest in an industry that is plagued with scandal? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. Since 1940, when the Investment Company Act of 1940 was created, the mutual fund industry has been regulated heavily and escaped any hint of impropriety. I like that word, impropriety. It means hanky-panky, travesuras. In 2003, some practices that were not quite illegal, but obviously unethical, were uncovered. And only a handful of funds and people were affected. Strong Funds, Janus, Bank of America, Putnam, Alliance. Poor George Putnam rolling in his grave. The vast majority of companies never engaged in any of these shenanigans, folks. And what were they doing? We don't want to get into it. If you contact me if you really want to know, or type in scandals of mutual fund scandals of 2003. Instead of losing $99,999 on a $100,000 account, for example, those poor slobs who invested their life savings through their 401k, who worked for Enron, investors lost less than a penny on $100,000. But if you take less than a penny from a million people, it adds up to a lot of money, right? And so what they were doing was not quite illegal. They were buying and selling mutual funds, which they really shouldn't do because mutual funds are long-term investments. Now, mutual fund companies won't let you do that. If you tried to do, in fact, some of them would never let you do it. Vanguard, American, no, you can't do that. If you sell the mutual fund, you can't buy it back the next day. You have to wait 30 days or 60 days. Some other companies like Oppenheimer said, sure, you want to sell it, then buy it back the next day. We're going to charge you 2%. And we're going to give that money to your fellow shareholders who are not playing this game. So now nobody engages this. But these people thought they were smart. Dick Strong of Strong Funds built it from scratch, was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and he made like $600,000 doing this shenanigans. But when you're worth hundreds of million dollars, $600,000 is, you know, poosh. And so, I mean, it wasn't lost on him. He wasn't charged with any crime because it wasn't illegal. But he said, look, I've ruined my life. I've let down all the people around me who trusted me, who looked up to me. And I thought I was invincible. You start reading all this stuff that people write about you, saying how wonderful you are. And I really, really, he's barred from the industry for life. So, you know, sad. Humans. Hubris. Look up hubris. If you're taking the Greek mythology, look up hubris. So, yeah, you can trust the mutual fund industry, dear students. So, after all we've learned, don't you have this feeling of deer in the headlights? Where do I start? How do I pick a mutual fund? Well, for what it's worth, here's my advice. Pick a mutual fund that invests in high-quality stocks or bonds. Well, I'm already punting, aren't I? How do you define quality, right? I know it when I see it. It's one of those situations where somebody looks at one company and says, that's a high-quality company. Another person looks at it and says, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. So it's difficult. It's difficult to define quality. But as some people say, I know it when I see it. It's well diversified across several industries and sectors of the economy globally, in my humble opinion. So in other words, remember, diversification. Has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, a management team with many years of experience. And this is what T. Rowe Price, American, who else? Dodge and Cox. This is what they do. They have a team of people working, not just one person. And they all work together, but they make their own decisions. One person might be buying Harley-Davidson, and the other person might be selling Harley-Davidson, and that is perfectly acceptable and fine. You want to avoid companies that shuffle their managers like a deck of cards every few years, which used to be most of them. They called it the star manager system. And this was trumpeted by Fidelity, none other than Fidelity. In fact, the guy who started Fidelity said, you know, this is how we do things. If they survive, great. If they don't survive, oh, well, that's the marketplace. Well, that's great if you get one of the good ones like Peter Lynch. But if you get one of the Charles Stedmans, yeah, not so good. That's why I like a team, right? And has been around for decades and performed consistently well in both good and bad markets. Do not tell me how well you've done in a good market. I ain't interested. Any idiot, yourself, myself included, can do well in a good market. I want to know how well you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, right? When the wheels fell off, when things started going badly. There's a couple of sayings in the industry. A rising tide lifts all boats. Yeah, so when the markets are going up, yeah, everybody seems to do well. But when the tide goes out, you can see who is swimming naked. I love that saying. And it's good. It's right. When the hard times come, and they will. We don't know when. We don't know how. If we did, you know, I wouldn't be here teaching you this, right? I'd be in Aruba somewhere. No, I'd probably be still teaching you online. But still, the idea is we know that there's going to be hard times. We just don't know when. And so you want a company that's done well in good and bad times. So where do we start? We start by looking at a sample mutual fund. Just one, bringing the 12,000 down to one. And what I like about this mutual fund, it's been around for 89 years. It's one of the most successful. It's not the only one out there, folks. But now in the face-to-face class, we would spend some time looking at this fund. And it's called the Investment Company of America. And so on the website and in Canvas, you'll see some links. 89 years of return. How well has it done over 89 years? Through the good times and the bad times. What's the benefit of time? Holding your investments for 1 year, 3 year, 5 years, 10 years. What happens if you pick the worst day to invest or the best day to invest? So check these out. And we would do that, you know, we would stop in the face-to-face class and do that right now. But there are already presentations. There's already, you know, video here to discuss audio commentaries and pictures and the like. So do that on your own. And so we ask, remember, we were happy if we get 8, 9, 10% with stocks. These people have done almost 12%. for 89 years. I think it's 11.89 or something like that. Last year, before 2022, it was 12%. But stocks have been very risky, right? Yes, in the short term. But in the long term, no. And this is what's so cool about investing. I mean, we're doing it to make money, right? Hey, but we're also part of this system that is raising the standard of living for people all around the world. And I know it sounds like an advertisement for capitalism, but you know, capitalism might just be the worst possible economic system ever created, except for all the others. So, hey, we're humans. You know, nothing we've done is perfect, and capitalism is one of the things we've done, but it's a lot better than the other systems that have been around. Now, what amazes me is usually capitalism and democracy go hand in hand, at least they have, and China's been able to, we thought, you know, 20 years ago when they entered the World Trade Organization, that they would liberalize their political system. Uh-uh, they've gotten worse. They've gotten even more authoritarian. But at the same time, they have a capitalist economic system that seems to be working, although there's, you know, they have their problems too. So we'll see how that works. But I'm optimistic. I mean, we don't blow ourselves up, die in our own waste, meteorite, tsunami, disco returning. I'm very optimistic about the next 20, 30, 40 years. We're going to have driverless cars. We're going to cure cancer. We're going to be able to talk to one another, universal translators, and we're going to cure climate. We're going to fix climate change. We have to. We have no other choice, right? Unless we want the entire state of Florida to be underwater. So in the long term, stocks have been very good to us if we have a long-term perspective. Now is not a good time to invest? Well, check out if you invested on the worst day or the best day. And it turns out that even if you picked the worst day, you didn't really do that badly. Now, if you picked the best day, you did pretty good, but you're not going to pick the worst day. You're not going to pick the best day. You're going to continue to put in $50, $100 a month in good times and bad times. And when the market goes down, you don't panic. You keep a long-term perspective and you dollar cost average. There's that term again. A system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount, it is boring, but it works. And see, I had to convince my wife a while ago, a long time ago when we met and got married. She was very frightened of stocks, which is good. You know, you should have a healthy skepticism. With dollar cost averaging, there is always good news. No matter what happens, I would say Anita, because that's her name. I'd say, Anita, no matter what happens tomorrow, when we wake up, there's good news. The market's up. Good news. Yippee. Your account is worth more. Your $100 is now worth $100.22. The market's down. Good news. Huh? How could the market? Oh, right. Next month, you'll get more shares at a lower price when the $50 or $100 comes out of your paycheck or checking account. When do you want to buy things? When they're on sale. But in the stock market, that's not the way people think. The market goes up 100%. Ooh, is it too late to get in? Yeah. The market goes down 50%. Ooh, is it too late to get out? Yeah. Now's the time. You know, when JCPenney's has a 50% sale, right, people go in the store, right? Not so with the stock market. So, as you've already seen in chapters 12, 13, and now 14, there are these hypothetical illustrations, sometimes called hypotheticals, illustrations. The life insurance companies will run these also. They're examples of returns of investments from a lump sum principal or a stream of investment, dollar cost averaging. And sometimes they have the minus sign there, the hyphen, and sometimes they don't. And I'm not sure which one's actually right. Or a combination of a lump sum or streams. They must be approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority and contain those disclaimers about past versus future performance and not being guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Company or any other entity, so you may lose money. So you've already seen these, right? You saw the stock, in chapter 12. You saw the bond in chapter 13. And what we're going to see in this chapter is a balanced fund, which invests in both stocks and bonds. And we're going to find that these things are actually pretty cool, especially for people who are really frightened. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you really don't need a balanced fund until you're in your later 40s, 50s, or 60s. But hey, if you're terrified, start early and you should do well. And we, again, show $100 a month, 30 years, $100 a month, 40 years, $100 a month for 40 years, but increasing $10 every year, one fewer trip to 10 bucks, Starbucks. And then what happens if you're in your late 40s, early 50s? That's when people come up to me and say, why didn't you tell me this 30 years ago? Sorry. And then we, one last time, thwack the life insurance industry. So check out the video. And it's the American Balance Fund. How do you get more, you get more generic than that, right? It's been around in one form or another since 1937. Okay. So, and of course, if you have any other hypotheticals you want me to run, you know, $200 a month or $25 a month or whatever, 50 years or whatever, just contact me because I can talk about this stuff far longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen. Slide number 23. Now, don't think I was trying to get you to buy the Investment Company of America, okay? No, it's not my, that wasn't my idea. And I'm not trying to get you to run out and buy that one. In fact, if you're starting from a clean sheet of paper, you would not want a company like, in my humble opinion, Investment Company of America, unless you married it with something that was more global, because most of the mutual funds that have been around for 50, 60, 70, 80 years are domestic funds. Now, a couple of these are global. Here, the Templeton Growth Fund is global. And then where's the other one? New Perspective Fund is global. And I think there was another one, I don't remember. No, the New Horizon Fund is global. Notice T. Rowe Price, 1960, is a very early time for people to go global. But most all these other funds are domestic. And the reason for that is not because people were snubbing the rest of the world. It's just that they didn't do it. You know, most mutual funds and most people just invested in the United States. They didn't bother to go abroad. So if you're starting from scratch, starting from a clean sheet of paper, I would recommend something global. But that doesn't mean these are all not good, very good funds. They are. They've all been around for over 50 years. All of them, except for the Dodge and Cox Stock Fund, which, and the Income Fund, and the Dynatech Fund, which is sad because these are all awesome funds and they got hit kind of hard last year in 2022. So I included them just because I love them and I don't want them to go away. And they won't. They'll bounce back, especially the Dodge and Cox Stock Fund. And this guy, Dynatech, he's genius. But he got hit hard because he's very growth-oriented. And growth got clobbered in 2022. But see, it's not the only one, folks. And these are just those that have been around for 50 years. There are many, many more that have done very well in good times and bad times. Look, there's Fidelity has a problem with this guy. He's a genius. Will Danoff. You can see interviews on YouTube of him. But he's getting old, like me. He's going to retire soon. And I don't know how they're going to replace him. And then look at this guy, the T. Rowe Price Small Cap Fund. 12.5%. Now, I included Fidelity Magellan. I really should not have because it looks like it's clobbered everybody else 15%. But that's because between 1977 and 1990, Peter Lynch racked up 29% a year. So I really shouldn't include Fidelity Magellan because it's never done that well since then. And it's just too much to ask of any individual. But these are all very good funds, by the way. Yeah, there's Vanguard. There's Franklin Templeton, Dodge and Cox. American is AMCAP, American Mutual Fund, Investment Company of America, New Perspective, and Washington Mutual Investors Fund. Yeah, good companies. Good companies. And there are many others. So what's the bottom line on mutual funds? Choose a fund family. Stick with them. There's a saying in the industry. Most mutual fund investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in. Huh? How could that be? Well, it's very easy. It's very easy. They wait for the market to go up 100% or 70% or whatever. Ooh, is it too late to get in? They put their money in the mutual fund, and then the market falls 30, 40, 50%. Ooh, is it too late to get out?
They pull their money out
just in time for the market to rebound. And of course, they wind up doing worse than the mutual fund they invest in. Reevaluate them periodically, but make changes judiciously and sparingly. You like those words? I like judiciously. You know, every 6 months, don't even look at it. A year, you know, when the market falls, I try to call my clients and try to get them to understand that this is normal. We've been here before. And I love it when they say, well, I don't even look at these statements. I say, oh, bingo. No, we can be more aggressive now. But if they say, oh, I lost $300, I say, you want to know how much I lost? And they need to be more conservative because remember, emotions, we're not rational individual. Emotions drive us, control us. And so we have to be careful about those emotions. And if we sign up for email delivery instead of paper delivery, we can then just delete the email and save the end of your statements. But they're all saved electronically. As you approach retirement, migrate from stock funds to bond funds, but don't give up on stocks entirely. Especially if you're frightened, consider balance funds. And even in retirement, consider balance funds. And we're going to, in these chapters, we've been talking about the accumulation phase. When we get to our last chapter on retirement estate planning, we're going to take a look at the distribution phase. And we're going to see that even in retirement, we want to have some stock exposure. And that's why balance funds are so cool. But what do? Use long-term perspective. Use dollar cost averaging, $50 a month, $100 a month. Raise it every time you get a raise or every year, $5, $10, whatever. But for the most part, forget about them. I know it makes investing boring, but it works. Dear students, mutual funds will bore you to wealth. Thank you so much for being in our class. Now, are we done with investments? Not quite. We're going to take a look at some odds and ends, mostly real estate, but then some of the other things, other alternatives that I think are it's best for the vast majority of us to just stay away from. But who knows? You might decide you want to invest in Beanie Babies or cars, collectible cars, or who knows what. It could be a great hobby and also a financial disaster. But we'll see you in our next chapter, Real Estate and Other Investment Alternatives. Thank you so much for being in our class.